From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard, and joining me on the show this week are Tom DeFrank, contributing editor at National Journal, and Tim Mack, senior correspondent for the Daily Beast. And here are the issues. An Egypt Air airliner with 66 passengers and crew aboard disappeared over the Mediterranean. Terrorism is suspected. In the increasingly bitter Democratic presidential race, Bernie Sanders continues to challenge Hillary Clinton, though she is thought to have a solid grip on the nomination, and she has already declared herself the nominee. Meanwhile, Donald Trump released a list of 11 judges from whom he might select a Supreme Court nominee if he's elected president. Two national polls showed Trump with a small lead over Clinton in general election matchups. And the U.S. accused China of, quote, dangerous behavior, unquote, when two Chinese jets intercepted an American reconnaissance plane on a routine mission over international waters. Well, we don't know much about this airliner, Tom, but we're going to have to talk about it anyway. In a case like this, since there's no other obvious cause, terrorism is obviously suspected. The plane was coming from Paris. What do you make of the whole thing at the moment?
Well, I mean, I think the preponderance of evidence, and I use the word evidence loosely because it's not clear what the evidence is or is not, but I mean, the suspicion is that it was a terrorist act. I mean, there are instances where an airplane will depressurize and blow up for mechanical reasons. It doesn't happen very often, so this is kind of the, to use an electoral term, I think terrorism is the presumptive cause, consider the presumptive cause of this, but we really don't know. I mean, Egypt Air does not have the world's greatest flight safety record, although it's a very established airline, but it's just another example, right on the edge of the summer, high traffic summer travel season, that for Americans and really tourists all around the world to be nervous about something else in addition to long lines.
Tim, it's hard to imagine what else it could be other than terrorism. I think that's why people jump to that conclusion. It's not a conclusion, but that's the chief suspicion.
Yeah, and some U.S. officials have already said that they believe there was evidence of terrorism that relates to this. I mean, the facts as we have it right now as we're taping the show is that the plane began to swerve violently before dropping and plummeting below the place where radar can pick them up and disappeared off the map, somewhere in the Mediterranean between Paris and Cairo. And it just totally disappeared. There's no known mechanical issues. It was a pretty standard flight, you know, one of those flights that happen every single day of the week and are very routine in the world.
Well, Tom, do you have anything more to say? I mean, not that we're not exactly bubbling over with information.
No.
Much analysis.
I mean, and always in these cases, Fred, their first report was a plane had disappeared from radar, and then the president of France, President Hollande, said it had crashed. And then there was a report a few hours later saying Egypt Air had found the wreckage. Well, that wasn't true. And then a few hours after that, I guess at daylight in Egypt, the wreckage was found about 160 miles or so off one of the Greek islands. So this will be a puzzle for quite some time, and it's not clear. But again, it's not something to give summer travelers just something more for travelers to worry about.
And there's been so much tragedy in the Mediterranean over the last year and a half. When you look at the Syrian refugee crisis, many people have tried to cross that sea in order to reach Europe in hopes of a better life free of violence and conflict.
Hundreds have drowned.
Many have drowned, and millions of people fleeing that violence right now. And, you know, there was some word that the original wreckage that was spotted, that they presumed to be the Egypt Air debris, was actually from other boats from refugees that had just smashed up and disappeared. And this has been a real problem in the Mediterranean. And, you know, even I was reading about how fishermen are now trying to avoid large swaths of the sea because they can't sell their wares if there, you know, there are dead bodies in the ocean. I mean, that is the level at which this crisis has become.
You know, what terrorists try to create is fear, and you know, after the what, 137 or so people were killed in Paris a few months ago, and then the killings in Belgium, and now this. It's hard to avoid fear.
Well, there's another factor here which is worrisome, although there's not enough evidence to connect any dots. It is very clear that ISIS is losing ground in Iraq and Syria to the onslaught by the U.S. and the Russians and Western allies, and so there is some belief on the part of Western intelligence analysts that as ISIS is losing territory, they're reverting to the kind of the tried and true standard tactic of terrorists of these sorts of bombings. There have been far more suicide bombings in Baghdad than there have been in quite a while, and I'm sure that that reality is on the minds of a lot of Western analysts trying to figure out, could this be a part of that? It's too early to know, of course.
Okay, we're going to switch to the presidential race, and normally, of course, we are totally fixated on Donald Trump, the real estate mogul who hasn't been officially given the Republican presidential nomination, but as you said, Tom, he's the presumptive nominee, and there's no way to stop him. But today, I want to start with Hillary Clinton, because Hillary Clinton, Tim, is in a very unusual situation where she's really fighting a two-front war. One, Bernie Sanders is her relentless foe for the Democratic presidential nomination. And I think there's one thing that particularly keeps him in, and that is when you see the matchups, you know, how's Hillary Clinton doing against Donald Trump? How's Bernie Sanders doing against Donald Trump? Sanders always does much better in these polls. That's one thing. And so she's fighting him, and then she's fighting Trump. You know, he's already focusing on Hillary and attacking her and so on. This is a pretty tough time for Hillary Clinton, Tim.
Absolutely. I mean, who would have imagined that we'd be going into the summer with the possibility of a Democratic contested convention and a Republican convention that was relatively drama-free? Bernie Sanders, he has every right to stay in the race if he wants to do that. Mm-hmm. I think his supporters expect that. Mm-hmm. And it shows the overwhelming weakness of the Hillary campaign to be able to unite her, the party behind her. She's, for all of her experience and her strengths, a relatively weak Democratic nominee.
Tom?
Well, it is amazing to me that you have two extraordinarily unpopular, disliked candidates for the arguably the most important political job in the world. It's a sad turn of events, but I guess we should remember that Bernie Sanders is doing exactly what Hillary Clinton did 8 years ago. She stayed in through the California primary, which is the last one. Mm-hmm. This year is on June 7th, a couple of weeks down the road, and Sanders has vowed to stay in until then. So there was a lot of talk 8 years ago that the party was so fractured between this upstart senator named Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton that there was no way to put the party together. And there was talk of forming Democrats for McCain, John McCain, the Republican nominee, because so many Democrats were unhappy with Obama. And yet that all came together. So while this is a complication for former Secretary of State Clinton, I don't think it is lethal, but it makes a feisty and interesting story.
It is certainly a complication. Tim, I mean, there seems to be increasing pressure on Bernie Sanders to get out of the race by Democrats who are for Hillary and others. And as I think you were suggesting, he has no intention of doing that at the moment.
Absolutely. And it's not clear what the incentive for him to leave is. Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. There are still delegates to be won. There's a very slim but existing chance that he could win the pledged delegates, the majority of the pledged delegates before the convention. After all of this fighting and the slog on the campaign trail and the arguments and the fracturing, you give up now. Why? Mm-hmm. To give up all your leverage on affecting the policy debate in the Democratic Party, to just walk away from it all? It doesn't make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But I think you make a really good point about how Hillary Clinton stuck it out in 2008. Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders has every right to do the same.
Tom?
Yeah, no, I think he does. And also, it is, I agree with Tim, for Sanders just to walk away now not only disappoints his mostly young base, but it also limits his ability to push Hillary Clinton further to the left. He has had some mm-hmm. success
Indeed.
In pushing her to the left, and mm-hmm. I think the stronger he looks, if he wins California, it gives him more of an opportunity to influence her and push her to the left. If not, you know, who knows? Maybe she might feel the need to put a running mate on her ticket who is further to the left than she is. You don't know. But
well, what about a ticket?
Not.
You raised the idea of a very left-wing Democratic ticket, which you would get if you had Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders as her vice presidential running mate. I'm sure that's not Clinton campaign's preference at the moment, but they might have to do that to ensure party unity, which Democrats usually have, and it looked a month or two ago like they would have it. But right now, it's very much in doubt.
I'm guessing historically unity usually comes together, and if it doesn't, there's a disaster mm-hmm. in November. So I don't think that she feels the need to put Bernie Sanders on the ticket. Cynic as I am, when the Clinton campaign leaked that they were seriously considering Elizabeth Warren as the running mate, I knew that was the kiss mm-hmm. of death for Senator Warren.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, I think we're going to have to take a break here. We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show today are Tim Mack of the Daily Beast and Tom DeFrank of National Journal, both of whom you've heard many times on this show. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/archive/issues-in-the-news. I'll say that again, voanews.com/archive/issues-in-the-news. That's Issues in the News with hyphens. So anyway, there are lots of ways you can get this show. Now let's turn to the second part, Tim, of the two-front war that Hillary Clinton is fighting, and that's against Donald Trump. Trump seems quite satisfied now to sit back and just fire salvos at Hillary Clinton. He's locked up the nomination, and I'll have to say, to my surprise, and the Republican Party seems to be mustering behind Trump in a way that sure didn't look likely even a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, there are just enormous forces at play here, and a lot of pressure being brought to bear on every politician who hasn't yet said that they're going to endorse the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a party apparatus that is very persuasive, I think, when it comes to, hey, how am I going to raise money? Am I going to be able to do it without the support of the other elements of the Republican Party? Speaker Paul Ryan, who said, hey, I'm not ready to endorse mm-hmm. Donald Trump as the nominee, he's getting pressure from everyone mm-hmm. in the Republican conference saying, hey, we need you to back the nominee. We can't have a fractured party mm-hmm. or Hillary Clinton's going to become the president. There's so much pressure on people who have decided to withhold their support for Donald Trump, and mm-hmm. you'll see that pressure molding the public image of Republicans and whether or not they're going to back this billionaire mm-hmm. businessman.
Yeah, what about the backing of Donald Trump, which has increased a lot, but there's still a threat of a third party that might run of disgruntled Republicans, although Mitt Romney has said now has sort of dropped out of that effort. He's not going to be the candidate, and I guess he has stopped searching for a candidate who would be the third party candidate. And there have been things being written, one by Ross Douthat of the New York Times, that this effort to have a third party candidate that would basically be an anti-Trump candidate has begun to peter out.
Yeah, I think it was inevitable that would be the case. It's third parties don't have a strong history of doing anything but spoiling elections mm-hmm. for more mainstream candidates, and mm-hmm. I think a third Republican Party would almost certainly hand the presidency to Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
and I think Republicans who would like to vote for anybody but Trump understand that's probably not a realistic option
mm-hmm.
If you really consider Hillary the greater of two evils mm-hmm. here. I mean, so I think it's more likely there'll be more Republicans who don't want to support Trump than there are Democrats mm-hmm. who don't want to support Hillary Clinton. I think that somehow the Democrats will figure out a way to come together, especially mm-hmm. If the polls continue to tighten. because the flip side is true. If the Democrats are fragmented, then there's a very good chance that the election could be handed to Donald Trump. So I think both sides are probably soul-searching now and coming to the conclusion, perhaps reluctantly by some, that the Clinton and Trump are the only ways to go.
Well, as you know, Tim, the American political system is poll crazy. And we have so many polls, and two of them now, one by Fox News and one by Rasmussen, both respectable pollsters, very good ones, showing Donald Trump ahead of Hillary Clinton. Now, the polls that really matter and give you some pretty good idea of how the candidates stand, we won't know until after the Democratic convention, which is when, in August or late July, and maybe a week or two after that, we'll have polls that really give you a good idea. But these ones are at least indicative of Trump doing better, and he hasn't even gotten the nomination yet, just doing better than, I think, maybe just me anyway, better than I thought he'd be doing. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, one thing that these polls show is his advantage on dealing with issues of the economy. On issues of foreign policy, Hillary Clinton pulls well ahead.
Yeah.
It's a very large advantage.
Well, she knows a lot more about it than he does.
Unfortunately, though, according to this Fox poll, far more people care about a candidate's positions and abilities on the economy than on foreign policy. By far, that's the number one priority that respondents told this Fox News survey. And on that issue, Donald Trump, I suppose, as a proxy for being a businessman, is viewed as someone who can handle the economy. Now, of course, those are two very, very different things. But in the view of the respondents, of the thousands of individuals who responded to this Fox News survey, being a businessman translates quite well to running the economy. Even though, if we look at Donald Trump's record, he has a history of bankruptcies. I believe more than four bankruptcies over the course of his business career. Not personal bankruptcies, but corporate bankruptcies. Yeah. He has put his name behind a lot of very suspicious products that turned out very poorly. Trump University, for example. And fundamentally, even if he were a successful businessman, you would find that that's not very similar to being president of the United States.
Yeah, but voters decide. And
they do decide.
And they do have a different view. You know, some people have said, I think I've even written this myself, that what Trump needs to do to be a better candidate is really to be a presidential. And he said, hey, I can act presidential whenever I want to and stop doing this stuff, you know, lobbing grenades at the, metaphorically speaking, at Hillary Clinton and just sounding off and sending tweets and all that stuff. And the truth is, I think he's going to do both. And we saw both of them in recent days. In the first place, Tom, he put out this list of 11 conservative judges, some at the federal level, some at the state level, who he might a list from which he might pick. I guess he said he would pick a Supreme Court nominee if he's elected president to fill the vacancy on the court after the death of Antonin Scalia. So that's part of it. And on the other hand, he is accusing now Bill Clinton, the former president, husband of Hillary Clinton, of having raped a woman. The woman says she did, was actually raped by him, and is trying to make that an issue.
Well, I think Donald Trump can be presidential when he wants to until somebody criticizes him, and then it just is something, a switch flips on, and he cannot resist going for the jugular against anybody who criticizes him. A very well-respected former Secretary of Defense for a Democrat and a Republican, Bob Gates, was mildly critical of Trump, and Trump just kind of had his head explode there for a little bit. And so
I saw Gates's. I don't know whether I'd even call it criticism. It was so mild. And Gates, I think, of all the national security officials, retired or active in America now, he's probably the most respected, widely respected.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what Trump gains from attacking him.
That's my point. I don't think he can help himself. So he can be presidential until he isn't. I want to say one other quick thing about polls. I wouldn't say these polls right now are meaningless.
No, I didn't mean to
apply
that.
No, you didn't. No, I'm just saying some reporters will say it doesn't matter, but I do think they're somewhat irrelevant. I think the most meaningful poll in this whole cycle is going to be the poll taken 3 or 4 days after the first debate in September, because by Labor Day, the first weekend in September is when traditionally Americans start really thinking about what they want to do in terms of electing a president. The first, there'll be three presidential debates, one vice presidential debate, and the first one will be in early to mid-September.
Yeah, but don't you think people, this race with Donald Trump in it is a little unusual? They've started thinking about this earlier than
normal. Oh, exactly, right. But, but I mean, I think by September, the polls will be far more dispositive, as lawyers say, about the final outcome. After the first debate. So let's see where we are.
Tim, I know you have more to say, but we're going to move on to another issue, and that's China. What in the world are the Chinese, speaking of people doing things that you wouldn't think they'd gain much from, what do the Chinese have two jets buzz and intercept an American reconnaissance plane on a routine mission over international waters? I mean, the Russians have buzzed American ships, in the Baltic? I just don't understand the motive of the Chinese here.
Well, there's been an emerging pattern of confrontation and provocation by the Chinese, particularly in the international waters off these man-made islands.
They say, don't the Chinese imply that they're the ones who've been provoked?
Well, they say that they've been provoked, but the United States has followed all international law. The United States has simply sailed in international waters near areas that that China has claimed to be theirs, and there's a big kind of game of chicken happening here. And there, you know, if you look at the situation, there's no real positive outcome for anyone. There's either going to be violence, which is terrible, or there's going to be some other form of confrontation in which this is resolved.
Do you think all our listeners understand what a game of chicken is?
Well, a game of chicken would be when you could play a game of chicken with any number of vehicles. The traditional one is where you have two cars on opposite ends of a road, and they race towards each other, and the first person to flinch or veer out of the way loses the game of chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, but some
very well. Yes, very well said, Tom.
But sometimes somebody doesn't flinch. I can remember very clearly as a young Army officer at the Pentagon in 1969, I went into my office in Defense Public Affairs, and there was a flash that said an American reconnaissance plane, an EC-121, an old Lockheed Electra, had been shot down by the North Koreans in international airspace. 31 sailors and Marines died. It was a total provocation. Obviously, it was a surveillance plane, but it was doing routine reconnaissance in international waters. And you get I got the feeling from studying about this later and looking at after-action reports that the North Koreans' MiG-21s just kind of went a little crazy here. Mm-hmm. And that is the danger of these sorts of things. And it's compounded by the fact that, let's face it, the Chinese are becoming more and more the bullies, the global bullies here. Mm-hmm. And they've been very upset about the U.S. putting Marines and other U.S. personnel into northern Australia. They think the Pacific is their purview. Obama has said we're pivoting to the Pacific. The Chinese have been upset about that for several years. And now that they're building up these little specks of islands in the South China Sea, they believe that's their territory, and they have every right to do this. These sorts of confrontations sometimes work out and everybody dials back, but not always. And so I think this is a dangerous game the Chinese are playing.
Tim, what about that, a dangerous game? So far the U.S. just, complains, says that's unacceptable behavior and so on. If the Chinese keep it up, it may go beyond that.
Yeah, this is a symptom of emerging power, right? This is this is them trying to flex their muscles as they're building up their military and their economic strength. They could argue, I'm sure they do argue, that the United States has bases all throughout the Pacific, and that's provocative.
Yeah.
That they sail near their man-made islands, and that's provocative. But for decades since World War II, the United States has been the global guarantor of worldwide peace, and the Navy has been the backbone of that guarantee. China now, as an emerging power, is trying to push back against that, is trying to change the whole scenario. And there are going to be possibilities of conflict because of this.
Indeed, there are, and we're seeing them. Tom, do you have anything to add here? We got very little time left. You don't? Well, I don't either. So that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Tom DeFrank, contributing editor at National Journal, and Tim Mack, senior correspondent for The Daily Beast. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Sidrak Franklin and Linus Remkes. I'm Fred Barnes of The Weekly Standard Magazine. Thank you for listening.